With infinite complacence, people went to and fro over the earth about their little affairs, serene in the assurance of their dominion over this small, spinning fragment of solar driftwood, which by chance or design, man has inherited out of the dark mystery of time and space.
Why don't you ask me what it feels like to be a freak?
The power of a new generation.
Greetings, and you're listening to Savage Science Radio here at Jackalope 105 FM, and I'm your host, Tracy Savage. Let's get some tunes going for this lovely Wednesday night.
Well, I can't stand to look at you now. This revelation's out of my hands. Still, I can't bear the thought of you now. This complication's leaving me scared. Stay when you think you want me. Pray when you need advice. Hey, keep your sickness off me. Trying to get through. Blame all your weakness on me. Shame that I'm so contrite. Hey, keep your fingers off me. Why can't I get through? You think you have the best of intentions. I cannot shake the taste of blood. Myself, this liberation seemingly rare. And I can't stand the taste of your mouth. This sublimation's out of my hands. You stay 'cause you think you want me. Pray when you need advice. Hey, keep your sickness off me.
I'm trying to get through.
Well, hello there, and it sure has been a busy week in the cosmos for science news. NASA has designated a successor to the space shuttle based on a design that was originally created to carry astronauts back to the moon, NASA Administrator Charles Bolden announced May 24th. The space agency said it didn't know when the proposed 23-ton vehicle, which could carry a four-person crew beyond low Earth orbit for missions up to 21 days, would be ready to fly. Now, with the space shuttle set for retirement in July, the agency will lack its own means to transport humans into space for at least several years and will reach the International Space Station by purchasing seats on the Russian Soyuz spacecraft. That's interesting. And a new way to find habitable planets? Well, you know, that's always welcome. Considering what we're doing to the one that we're on right now, astronomers have discovered a method for verifying the presence of Earth-like habitable planets that otherwise would be too tiny to confirm. Francois Friesen of the Harvard-Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and his colleagues used NASA's Spitzer Space Telescope to examine a candidate planet initially detected by Kepler spacecraft. The Spitzer observations show that the dimming of light from the sun-like star at infrared wavelengths is identical to that found by Kepler in visible light, confirming that a tiny planet about 2.2 times Earth's diameter passed in front of the star. The newfound planet is too hot to contain liquid water, but the comparative technique can find cooler Earth-like planets, Friesen reported May 23rd at a meeting in Boston of the American Astronomical Society. And questions about the moon's interior are being talked about this week. No, we're not talking about green cheese. We're talking about water. Parts of the moon's interior may contain as much water as in Earth's upper mantle, a new study finds. Eric Howery of the Carnegie Institution for Science in Washington, D.C., and his colleagues based the finding on primitive samples of lunar magma that retained water because they were trapped in crystals. The finding, reported online May 26 in Science, is surprising because it's believed that the moon formed at high temperatures when a Mars-sized body slammed into Earth. Now, the hot, violent formation was thought to have caused the most lunar water to evaporate. And speaking of up there, Mars' rapid buildup, well, Mars grew up in a hurry, reaching half its current size in no more than 1.8 million years, a new study finds. A team including Nicholas Daufus of the University of Chicago came to that conclusion after examining data on isotopes of several heavy elements found in Martian meteorites. The rapid growth suggests that Mars accumulated its mass in isolation and that its supply of material was suddenly truncated. The study reported in the May 26 issue of Nature also indicates that the red planet coalesced during a time when 100-kilometer-sized objects such as asteroids were still forming. And a short-lived stellar explosion seen 2 years ago may have come from the most remote object ever seen. Discovered April 29, 2009, the source of the gamma ray burst lies an estimated 13.14 billion light years from Earth. Combined with the data on a slightly less remote burst found just 6 days earlier, the discovery suggests that the infant universe forged stars at a higher rate than had been estimated. Antonino Cucciara of the University of California, Berkeley, reported the analysis May 25th at a meeting in Boston of the American Astronomical Society and in an upcoming astrophysical journal, putting the chances of the object being the most distant ever seen at 23%. A recently discovered galaxy might still be more distant, however, and you can find that was published on 12611. That would be this year. And something very cool, in case you haven't seen it yet, you're going to want to check this out. It's a survey that's captured our local universe in 3D. The cosmic backyard will never look the same thanks to a new three-dimensional map, the most detailed view ever assembled out to a distance of 380 million light years, covering 95% of the sky. Wow! The map uses dust-penetrating infrared observations to reveal features that invisible visible light are obscured by the Milky Way. We get a more detailed look at major structures that are almost hidden by our galaxy, like the Hydra Centaurus supercluster and the Norma supercluster of galaxies, said Karen Masters of the University of Portsmouth in England. She unveiled the map, which catalogs some 45,000 galaxies, on May 25th at a meeting in Boston of the American Astronomical Society. Sounds like it was a busy day. Already had a couple stories from then, because the map encompasses nearly the entire sky rather than the smaller wedges revealed in previous surveys. It shows in new detail how clusters of galaxies congregate into vast walls and filaments, said Michael Hudson of the University of Waterloo in Canada. Hudson's team has already used the data to find that a vast concentration of galaxies called the Shapley concentration is about twice as massive as previously estimated. The largest galaxy concentrations trace the highest densities of dark matter, the invisible material believed to make up most of the cosmos mass. Hudson plans to use the map, which includes some galaxies as distant as 1 billion light years, to examine the distribution of dark matter on scales up to 500 million light years. Redshift measurements, which gauge the amount by which cosmic expansion stretches light to longer wavelengths, provide the map's critical third dimension, the distance of objects from Earth. Masters and her colleagues have dedicated the map, based on data gathered by the two-mass redshift survey, to John Hutra of the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hutra, who died last year, pioneered the survey, so you can look that up. It is just really, I can't really describe it on the radio other than you gotta see it to believe it. It's really astounding. So you would Google two mass, which is two, the number two, MASS redshift survey, and check it out. And back down here on Earth, there is a debate going on about Hawaii, and this new study suggests that a pancake, not a plume, formed the island chain. A new analysis questions the prevailing theory that the islands were formed in sequence by volcanic activity as the Pacific plate drifted over a thin, hot plume rising from deep inside the Earth. Instead, a shallower pocket of abnormally hot rocks could be powering the vacation spot's famous volcanoes. Researchers from MIT and Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana, reported this in the May 27th issue of Science. Other scientists, however, don't think it's the hot plume is done for. Now, with that theory, quote, "this result, like many results, isn't the final word," unquote, says Cicely Wolf, a seismologist at the University of Hawaii at Manoa. Study co-author Robert Vander Hilst and his colleagues used seismic data to dig through the mantle, the gooey but mostly solid region between the planet's core and surface, looking layer by layer through sources of heat. Now, the team couldn't find a plume, but did find something strange to the west of the islands, a pancake-shaped pocket of heat about 650 kilometers underground and up to 2,000 kilometers wide. Rocks in this hot pocket were as much as 300 to 400 degrees Celsius hotter than scientists would have expected at that depth. Now, in order to have formed the Hawaiian Islands, the pancake would need to somehow heat the surface, spurring the volcanoes. But it's possible that molten rocks could be bubbling up from the easternmost edge of the pocket like a lava lamp, so to speak, says Vander Hilst, a geophysicist at MIT. But why molten material would rise there isn't clear. Why there's only one Hawaii and not five or 100, I don't know, he says. Now, a plume, on the other hand, would start much deeper, erupting from the boundary between core and mantle about 2,800 kilometers beneath the surface. In a study published in Science in 2009, Wolf found a plume-like stream seemingly cooking Hawaii's bottom. Now, in her study, Wolf used sea bottom sensors near Hawaii to record how shaking from earthquakes traveled through the mantle. Since seismic waves pass more slowly through a patch of hot rocks than a patch of cooler rocks, the waves can pinpoint heat sources directly. Now, the MIT team, in contrast, didn't map out the mantle's hot spots but its rock layers, analyzing earthquake data recorded by global networks far away from Hawaii. Like a parfait, the mantle contains distinct mineral layers determined by heat and pressure. If scientists can spot the transition from one mineral to the other, they can roughly infer temperature at that depth. Now, neither method is rock solid, Wolf says, so it will take more work to truly expose Hawaii's heat source. Nothing in the earth sciences is perfect, she says. Now, the truth may be part pancake and part plume, says Gus Nollet, a geophysicist at the University of Nice in Sophia Antipolis, France. He has proposed that plumes may not burst up like flamethrowers blast through the mantle, but instead these streams of hot rock could get stuck between mineral layers, forming pockets of heat. Van der Hilst agrees that a plume could indeed be feeding Hawaii's hot pancake from below. So the debate will go on. Anybody who thinks that scientists don't have lively debates really need to pay a little bit more attention to science. And we bring it all to you here, right on this show. And now here's a little music break before our special presentation this evening. Bet you're awake after that song. Well, our special presentation this evening is Universe by Robert Heinlein. And as you probably know, he wrote more than 50 novels and many collections of short stories. Heinlein is best known for his novel Stranger in a Strange Land. It's about a boy born during the first manned mission to Mars. We've been talking about Mars, so that's pretty apt. Of course, a popular work of his is Starship Troopers. Now, he called his book speculative fiction rather than science fiction, and he was trying to write about events that could actually happen, taking into consideration the natural laws of the universe. Now, he was known as one of the big three, of course, the other two being Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke. He was one of the very first writers to break into mainstream, getting four of his stories published in the Saturday Evening Post, taking the sci-fi out of the pulp genre and putting it right into access for the public, not just specialized interests. Now, something that always cracks me up when I read that genre of sci-fi, many concepts have actually become products that we use every single day. They hadn't even been invented yet. Listen to these few things from Heinlein's works that we take for granted and weren't even around when he wrote them. Automatic light switches, hand dryers, drafting software, robotic vacuum cleaner, like who hasn't seen that TV commercial, mobile phones, Waldos, teleconferencing, screensavers. Now, that was from Stranger in a Strange Land, the San Francisco-Oakland BART transbay tube, waterbeds, vehicle remote keyless system, who doesn't use that on a daily basis, online newspapers, well, hello, designer babies and genetic counseling, like we don't debate that as a hot topic in politics, and science, of course, radio synchronized clocks, and individual battlefield tactical displays, and that was from Starship Troopers. So, among all his novel short stories and collections that he had during his life, there were four films, two TV series, several episodes of a radio series, one of which you're going to hear tonight, and a board game that was derived more or less directly from his work. He also wrote a screenplay for one of the films. Heinlein edited an anthology of other writers' science fiction short stories. He was given all sorts of accolades and esteemed awards, and here is Universe, as presented by X-1. Stay tuned.
Countdown for blastoff. X-5, -4, -3, -2, X-1. Fire! From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand would-be worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight, Universe. We are just beginning to discover how boundless our universe really is. And yet as man reaches out to the stars, out toward infinity, ironically enough, he may be building himself a new kind of prison. What would it be like to live all your life in a world no larger, say, than a single gigantic rocket ship bound on an endless mercy?
Look out! You all right?
Yes. Just missed me.
What was it?
A mutant with a slingshot, I think. Must have dashed down that passageway.
Want to go after it?
Oh, we'd never catch it, Alan. Probably 12 decks above us by now.
I didn't think they ever came down this far. Trolls usually get them before they reach this level.
Well, they get more daring with each generation. This one looked like a female.
Male or female, it might have killed us. I told you this trip was pure foolishness, climbing 24 deck levels to hear a crazy old man rave.
All right, Alan, we're almost there now. Let me see, compartment X15, level 24. This is the place.
This area smells as if it hadn't been visited by a sanitation crew for generations.
Mm. This part of the ship is almost deserted.
Yes?
Is this the compartment of John the Witness?
Who are you?
My name is Hugh Hoyland, cadet from Scientist Barracks. This is my friend Alan Mahoney.
What do you want of John the Witness?
Well, only to talk.
Are you a believer in Jordan?
Naturally.
I have heard that there are those among the younger scientists who doubt the word of Jordan.
To doubt is death. We're not heretics.
Ah, enter.
I've brought you a gift of tobacco, grown on the richest level.
Oh, it smells good.
I assure you it's of the best.
Wait here. I'll get him.
What a rat's nest.
Shh.
What the devil do you think he can tell you?
Alan, I'm not sure. I'm not sure.
Well?
Are you John the Witness?
I am.
Good evening to you. I'm Hugh Hoyland. This is my friend, Alan Mahoney.
What brings a gentleman of the scientist class to my humble compartment?
I've heard that you and your parents before you have been keepers of the legend of the ship.
Since Jordan gave the word.
I'm anxious to hear the word as Jordan spoke it.
Why?
Because our young scientists, well, among them there have been some who talk against the word.
There are regulations against such heresy.
Still, some of them say the ship has no purpose. They say that we are here accidentally, that we have no more grace in Jordan's eyes than the most deformed mutant who dwells in the highest level of the ship.
What shall I say to you?
Well, I wish to hear the word from the mouth of one who knows, in order that I may become more convinced.
Sit. You have a gift for the witness?
The finest tobacco.
Good. I will dim the lights. Now pay close attention, for these are the words as my father's father's father gave them to his son's son's son. This is how the ship came into being, how our people were created. In the beginning there was only Jordan, thinking his lonely thoughts. Out of his thoughts came a vision. Out of the vision came a planning, and out of the planning came decision. Jordan's hand was lifted, and the ship was born. Mile after mile of good compartments, tank after tank for golden corn, ladder and passage, door and locker fit for the needs of the yet unborn. He looked on his work and found it pleasing, meet for a race that was yet to be. He thought of man, and man came into being. Then Jordan checked his thoughts and searched for a key. Man untamed would shame his maker. Man unruled would spoil the plan. So Jordan made the regulations and order came to the works of man. A crew he created to work at their stations, scientists to guide the plan. Over them all he created captain, made him judge of the race of man. Thus it was in the golden age.
These are the true words?
As my father's father taught them.
But what of the strange beast-like people on the upper levels of the ship? Surely Jordan did not create them.
Jordan is perfect. All below him lack perfection. You have heard of the legend of Huff?
I have heard that he mutinied against Jordan.
Darkness swallowed the ways of virtue. Sin prevailed upon the ship. And before wisdom prevailed and the bodies of Huff and his followers were fed into the converter, some of the rebels escaped and lived to father the mutants. They are tainted with the sins of their fathers.
Witness, one more question.
Speak.
What is the ship?
The ship is a great sphere, 25 kilometers wide, and 100 levels deep.
I know that, but the upper levels.
Regulations forbid us to venture into the upper levels, but it is said that beyond the levels of the mutants,
lies the forbidden place where Jordan's spirit prevails.
So I've heard, yet something troubles me. Something which prompted my coming here.
Yes, my son.
What lies beyond the ship?
What?
What lies beyond the ship?
This is heresy.
Answer me.
I will not permit such talk. The ship is complete. The ship is universal. The ship is everywhere. The ship is endless.
Your mutterings are those of a frightened old man. No. They answer nothing.
You question the word?
I think you lie.
Hear me, Mr. Hoyland. For what you have already said, I can have your body fed into the converter. Your soul launched on the endless trip.
You threaten me.
You, for Jordan's sake.
Do you think I fear this dried fig of a man?
You! Sir, my friend is impetuous. He does not understand.
I might be persuaded to forget a substantial gift.
Why, you pig!
You!
Alan, come on. The sight of this so-called holy man offends me.
No, you shall not leave.
Don't try to frighten me with that gun, old man.
Remain where you are, heretic.
I warn you, put down that gun.
No closer.
Drop it.
Very well, then. Death to the heretic.
Alan, get him. Alan. He's not breathing. Is he dead?
I don't know. Come on, Hugh. We've got to get out of here.
Right.
Nowhere. We can't go back. They'd feed us into the converter before we could even... What's that?
An alarm. That old woman must have turned it in. Come on, Alan. The patrol will be here in no time.
Where can we go?
Yes, where? The upper levels.
No, the mutants.
We'll have to take our chances. Come on, Alan. Let's go. Listen. That's the patrol. Come on, we've got to climb.
There's a hatchway down the corridor.
All right, quickly.
Oh, are we fired?
Alan, up the ladder. Up. Come on, Alan, come on.
Phew, wait. How far are we from the outside wall?
Judging by the slope of the deck. About 2 miles. Alan, let's try this passageway here.
If you hadn't asked him that stupid question...
Now, there's no use going over that.
But why did you do it?
I've been thinking about it for a long time. And he began to give me those stupid, tight answers. And I just saw red, I guess.
Who are you to question the ways of Jordan? When you asked me to go with you to visit the witness, I thought you wanted spiritual help. I never dreamed.
I'm sorry, Alan. I'm sorry. I couldn't foresee this.
Wait a minute.
What?
I saw something move.
Where?
Near that bulkhead.
I don't see anything.
Maybe my eyes are going bad.
Still, listen! You behind us! Alan, look out! No. What are you? Throw that knife. Keep away from me, you.
Don't kill it. Not yet.
Who are you?
You must forgive my friend Bobo. Like so many of my people, he's rather impetuous where members of the so-called super race are concerned.
Who are you? What place is this?
As you can guess, from my leg, I'm a mutant.
Mutant? Where is Alan?
Your friend is dead.
Dead?
I was not able to restrain my people in time to save him.
Why don't you destroy me and get it over with?
We do not kill for pleasure, Mr. Hoyland. Only when necessary.
You know my name?
I read your identification tag.
Who are you? Mutants can't read.
My name is Gregory.
Gregory?
I'm a leader of my people. You see, although we are unfortunate in our heredity, Mr. Hoyland, many of us are quite intelligent.
And why do you live like animals?
We'd rather live like free animals than like regimented slaves, as you do.
I've heard you practice cannibalism.
Undoubtedly, you hear many things about us. You turn your head. Why?
That monster. I've never seen a creature like him.
Bobo is an unfortunate. He was born without the power of speech.
How can you tolerate such a monstrosity?
We've learned to live with difference. If we began to destroy our imperfects as you do on the lower levels, there would soon be no one left.
It violates the regulations. The word of Jordan
you know,
states
Mr. Hoyland, your people are really quite primitive and barbaric.
You dare say that to me?
I dare say a good deal more. Let us go to my compartment and speak further. I'm always interested in information on the lower levels.
I'll give you no information.
Bobo. No. I want Mr. Hoyland in my cabin, please.
No!
I advise you to go quietly, Mr. Hoyland. Bobo has a hatred of superior beings, which is unfortunate, but quite understandable. Proceed. Enter, Mr. Hoyland.
This is where you live?
Yes.
But you have books.
Stolen from your libraries, Mr. Hoyland.
Compton's Astrophysics, Philosophy of Interstellar Navigation, Celestial Mechanics. You've read these?
Most of them.
I had no idea that you... Why did you bring me here? What do you intend to do?
Do you believe in Jordan, Mr. Hoyland?
There is no other belief.
And the trip. I suppose you believe in the trip, too.
What else is there to believe? When you die, your remains are fed to the converter, and your soul makes the trip.
And where does the trip take you?
But to Centaurus, of course.
Ah. And where or what is Centaurus?
Centaurus is... Mind you, I'm just telling you the orthodox answer. Centaurus is where you arrive when you've made the trip. A place where everybody is happy and where there's always good eating.
And you believe this?
Well, the peasants believe it literally, but many of the younger scientists, like myself, know it is figurative and symbolic. Why do you ask?
Did it ever occur to you, Mr. Hoyland, that the trip is exactly what your peasants believe it is?
What?
And that the ship and all the crew were actually going somewhere, moving?
The ship can't go anywhere. It already is everywhere.
Imagine a place bigger than the ship. Much
bigger.
With the ship inside it, moving inside it.
There can't be any place bigger than the ship. There just wouldn't be any place for it to be.
Oh, for half's sake, listen. You know the lowest level?
Of course.
If you started digging a hole in the lowest level, where would that hole go?
It's forbidden to think such thoughts.
Where would it go?
I can't think about it.
Bobo, we're going to take Mr. Hoyland to the place.
No. Where are we going?
To the top level.
But that's certain death.
Nonsense. I've been there 1,000 times.
No.
Come on.
No, I won't. I won't. You can't make me.
I think we can.
No, no, please.
Now, shall we proceed peacefully, or shall I have Bobo persuade you? Open the door, Bobo. Inside.
No. What place is this?
This, Mr. Hoyland, is the main control room. Mr. Hoyland, you're trembling.
It isn't true. No. No, there's no such place except in mythology.
Ah, you younger men are so wise, Mr. Hoyland, except for one thing. This happens to be the main control room of the ship.
Main control? But it's just a huge room with an instrument panel.
And what did you expect?
How do you know this is the main control room?
See these instruments? Using them, the navigator many hundreds of years ago actually steered the ship on its voyage.
I don't understand.
I didn't suppose you would. Sit down.
Very well.
Look up. What do you see?
A huge shield.
Watch it for one moment, Mr. Hoyland. You're going to see something that few of us have ever been privileged to witness.
What are you doing?
I'm dimming the lights. Don't be frightened. Keep your eyes focused on the shield above us. Ready? Watch.
It's sliding back. Coast of Jordan.
Well?
What am I seeing?
The universe, Mr. Hoyland. The universe in all its beauty. The stars, the planets, the suns and moons and constellations.
No. No, it can't be. The ship is the universe. There is nothing but the ship.
Ah, but there it is. You see it before your eyes spread out like a canopy of glory. Do you still deny it? Answer me, Mr. Hoyland. Do you deny it?
No. No, I can't deny it. They've lied. They lied to all of us.
Good. I have showed this to others of your people whom we captured, and though they saw it before their very eyes, they would not believe it.
Please. Please tell me all about it.
Tell me the truth about the ship and about the universe. What are these things? How did this come about?
Many thousands of years ago, on a planet like those you have just seen, a planet called Earth, a scientist named Jordan decided to build a ship that would carry men from one planet to another. For many years, Jordan and thousands of others studied and planned. And when they were finished, they built the ship. A ship so large that it had to be assembled in its own orbit beyond a place called the Moon. 60 years it took them to construct. And when it was finished, a whole new science had been conceived. Then the trip was begun. The trip that was to land a colony of Earthmen on a far-off planet called Centaurus, millions of light years beyond the furthest planet ever reached before.
How do you know these things?
Among my books are the log which Jordan himself kept and the records of the journey for the first 40 years.
What happened?
There was a mutiny. A man named Huth led a rebellion of those who wanted to turn back. In the struggle, the navigators were killed. The crew fell into a state of anarchy. In the years to follow, small groups of men tried to organize the ship for navigation, and each time, they failed. Finally, the whole idea was abandoned. And so, for centuries, we have swung in space, unmanned, undirected, living in a lost world of our own making, without purpose, without direction.
Why have you told me this?
Can't you guess?
You want to finish the trip.
Yes. But I can't.
You can't?
Look at me, Mr. Hoyland. You see, a mutant. A man with a twisted leg. My people are outcasts, condemned to death if we so much as set foot in the lower levels of the ship. The main drive is in the lower levels where my people are forbidden to go. No. It would mean that both our people would have to work together. Our differences encouraged rather than denied.
All right. I'll see the captain himself. I have an uncle on the central board. I'll tell him what I've seen here.
And do you think he'll believe you?
Send one of your people with me.
That's asking a good deal.
I'm risking a good deal by going back.
Very well. Bobo will go with you.
Bobo? He can't talk.
There will be no need for talk. I will write a message guaranteeing safe conduct for a group of unarmed scientists to visit the main control room. Bobo will take you safely through our territory. What happens when you reach your own level is up to you.
One moment.
Yes, what? You.
Quick, Uncle, let us in.
Hey, but this mutant.
He's harmless, please, Uncle, please.
Now. What is this? You want it for...
I know all about that. Uncle, listen. I must see the captain.
The captain? Are you mad?
Uncle, you're a council member. You can get me to see
He'll
him.
He'll kill you. You want it for heresy.
I don't care. I must speak with the captain. Now, Uncle, you're close to him. You can arrange it.
I don't understand.
Listen to me. The ship is moving. I can prove it. Do you understand? There is a purpose in the ship.
I don't understand what you're babbling about.
Now, never mind. Just talk to the captain. Tell him I have information of tremendous importance. Tell him I've arranged a truce with the mutants.
Truce?
Here, show him this paper, signed by their leader. Do it, Uncle, for my sake.
I don't know what...
Uncle, please, if I'm to die, let this be my last request to you.
Very well. I'll speak to the captain.
Say, Mr. Hoyland, that you saw this with your own eyes.
I swear it, Captain. I swear it on the word of Jordan.
Let me see the paper again. Commander Erst, what do you think?
I don't know, sir. It might be a trick.
I guarantee you safe conduct.
If these things are as Mr. Hoyland reports them, it would pay to risk a few lives.
A man is a convicted heretic.
Still, we must not discount his word. He has a safe conduct, and the mutant risked its life coming with him. I think we might investigate.
Captain, you mean you will do it?
I will have an expedition outfitted. Dismissed, Mr. Hoyland.
Thank you, sir.
Captain, do
Commander,
you...
Sir. You will make the necessary arrangements for an expedition. And I trust you understand.
Perfectly, sir. Perfectly.
Lieutenant.
Mr. Hoyland.
You better halt your men here. This is the spot. Patrol! Up!
Well, I see no welcoming party of mutants.
There'll be none. Their leader will meet you inside the main control room.
You don't say. Just where is this main control room?
Beyond that door.
I see. All right, men. Ready up!
Lieutenant, why do you ready arms?
In case of ambush.
Ambush? Now, wait a minute, Lieutenant. What are those men doing with that ray gun?
Just aiming it at the door.
Are you mad?
No, Mr. Hoyland, but most certainly you are to think that we could be lured up here to be slaughtered with a fantastic story about some mythical control room.
Guns ready,
Lieutenant,
sir.
Lieutenant, I warn you, these people have acted in good faith. You can't break that faith.
Oh, mutant! Come out!
For Jordan's sake,
hold
Lieutenant!
It. A little too quiet for comfort. Mutant! Open the door!
Please, Jordan, don't let anything happen.
All right, it's opening. Ready, men. Someone's coming out. Steady.
Gregory, stay back!
Fire!
You fools! You've killed him!
Here come the rest of them. Fire! Fire!
Fools!
That should teach them a lesson they won't forget. All right, men, inside the room. Come on, Harlan. You're under arrest as a conspirator in this ambush.
Ambush, you fool. You blind, stupid fool.
All right, that'll be enough. You've been inside this place before?
Yes.
What's this machinery?
These are the controls he would have used to steer the ship.
Gone out of his mind, Lieutenant.
Steer the ship? Who?
The leader, the one you killed.
This ugly mutant?
This ugly mutant. Happened to be a man of true genius.
Why, you're mad.
Am I? Lieutenant, this man had a vision which would have saved you, but you chose to kill him because you couldn't stand the sight of his difference from you.
Shut up, Hyland. Don't listen to him, man.
You can't shut your eyes, and you can't shut your minds, and you can't shut your ears to this.
Luke's moving back.
Yes, look. Let the vision of this confound your ignorance and blind your eyes. This is the heritage of stars and open skies for which men have yearned for centuries. Try to destroy this, and you will only destroy yourselves.
Death to the heritage.
But I say to you that you can't keep this from our people. They will seek it out. The ship will be manned, and the ship will be steered. And there will be freedom, purpose, and respect for ourselves. This is your heritage. Look. Look upon the universe.
Kill him.
X minus one has just brought you Universe, a story written by Robert Heinlein and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Heard in the cast were Donald Buca as Hugh, Peter Capel as Gregory, Bill Griffiths as Alan, Abby Lewis as the woman, Edgar Staley as the witness, Jason Johnson as the uncle, John Seymour as the captain, and Ian Martin as the lieutenant. Your announcer is Fred Collins. X Minus One is directed by Fred Way and is a transcribed NBC Radio Network production. Now, next week we have a strange story to tell. A sweet, blood-curdling little story that is really only two sentences long. the last man on Earth sat alone in a room. And then there was a knock on the door. What knocked on that door? You'll find out next week on X minus one.
When you buy United States savings bonds, you help to build your own future security. Here's an opportunity to save systematically for long-range personal objectives. So invest in United States savings bonds. Now follow the Abbotts to mystery and adventure over most NBC radio stations.
Wow, now I'm going to have to go look up the show that came after this on the original broadcast, because now I want to know what happened to the guy in the room. I'm totally intrigued. Man, those old-time radio shows, they're so much fun. Hope you enjoyed Robert Heinlein's universe. And as always, he weaves social issues within his themes and his subplots. Gets you thinking, you know, issues today are just as timely as they were then. And if you think about it, they would be just as applicable here on Terra Firma as it would be out in the cosmos. So, you know, human behavior doesn't seem to change all that much if you really think about it. Well, Savage Science has come to a close this week, and I'd like to thank Nick Peluco for the beautiful show graphics he did. If you take a look at some of the details in the background, they fit right in with our genre of our sci-fi shows that we bring to you. And also, Dennis Bond and Hawk Productions for that fantastic intro that I use every single week. Waleed Al-Haddad, who takes time out of his busy day to help me find topics and great ideas to bring to you. And my wonderful executive producer, Todd Sheets, who does his magic with the show so that you can be entertained and dazzled every week for an hour here at Savage Science Radio. Well, that's about it. And I'd like to leave you with a song. It's a special tribute to somebody who was a great fan of Robert Heinlein, who was very awesome, and a lot of other people are going to miss him a great deal. So on that note, keep your powder in your pants dry, and happy trails until we meet again.
Baby, I've been here before. I know this room, I walk this floor. I used to live alone before I knew you. Yeah, and I seen your flag on the marble arch. But listen, love, love is not some kind of victory march. No, it's a cold and it's ever broken. Hallelujah. 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 Hallelujah.
Maybe there's a God above. As for me, all I ever seem to learn from love is how to shoot at someone who outdrew you. Yeah, but it's not a complaint that you hear tonight. It's not the laughter of someone who claims to have seen the light. No, it's a cold and it's ever and only hallelujah.
Before the Lord of Song with nothing.